Hello and welcome to Near FM 90.3. On our show today, Patrick Howe will be talking to us about memory training, and later on Caroline will be talking to Jerry Cooley on tour guiding and Dublin. Hello and welcome to How to Learn. My name is Jimmy Mack here in the studios this evening, and with me I have Nick Ledoux, and our guest today is Patrick Howe.
Okay, Patrick is a social entrepreneur whose mission is to teach people how to learn, and he's especially interested in teaching people with learning difficulties. So, Patrick, you've had many different jobs in your life. You started as a trained welder. You are a professional card player, and you're a taxi driver occasionally. But your mission in life is teaching people with difficulties. How did it start? Going back to your school years, how did it start? What drove you there?
Well, what drove me here was basically I was in trouble from the day I was born. I spent the first 6 years of my life in hospital. I was operated on every 3 months, left foot, right foot, until I was six. And I hated hospital, and I had calipers and I had crutches, and they disappeared when I was about six, six and a half. And boy, did I have freedom. No calipers, no crutches. I could run, play football, do anything. But then 6 weeks later, I had a tragic accident. A 10-ton lorry full of potatoes ran over my right foot twice and actually stopped on it. And when they reversed it off, I ended up in Temple Street Hospital. And they wanted to amputate my leg, but my mother persuaded the doctor to do his best. And he said, I know nothing about club feet. And he said, I know nothing about orthopaedics. And he said, my mother said, just says to him, listen, you're here now. Just do your best. We can always take it off later, but give him the chance. And whatever the doctor did, it worked. And I spent another 4 or 5 years in and out of Clontarf Orthopaedic Hospital. I missed a lot of school. And I knew I wasn't stupid. And I just thought it was the disadvantage. And then I met my wife and I ended up getting married. And she sent me back to adult education. Now, she could read, but she wasn't a great speller or anything like that. But she was just above the average education.
So it's only until you married and that you started adult education that you realised that you had dyslexia.
Well, that's what they said. I don't know whether, I still don't know whether I am or I'm not. But technically, if you can't read and write by the age of 27, you are technically dyslexic. But the point about it was, when I went back into the adult education, they were using the same techniques that they were using when I was in school. And it just didn't make sense to me. So what happened was, I decided to put my education into card games. So it took me 6 days to learn to read, write and spell and speak Spanish, because the one thing I knew, phonetics didn't work.
Let's go back to card playing when you were a kid. Just tell us about how card playing just changed things.
Well, when I was about five or six, they were all gamblers in my house. And me being the youngest, the chances of me ever sitting at the table to play against me brothers and sisters, it was a non-starter. So I got my mother to bring me in a pack of cards, because there was no radio, TV, and I used to practice day in, day out, memory. And then when I did get my chance, about seven, I cleaned them all out. I took every penny off them, because I have an advantage. I'm a counter, and that's where it came from.
So what is it? Observation?
More.
Calculation?
Calculations.
Risk,
percent.
Probability.
Yeah.
But you're a kid.
Yeah. But I still understood. I understood the value. Like if you gamble, and a gambler doesn't know whether he's going to win or not. I didn't want to be a gambler. I wanted to make sure I won. And that drove me. And the more I start memorising cards, the more I realised that I'd better control than everybody else. So it gave me a massive advantage. It gave me percentages. I don't like the word gambling. And I've always said that I'm not a gambler.
Okay, how did you do through school? Did you have a miserable time? Through days and days of classes where you couldn't really grasp anything? Were you bored?
Well, what actually happened was, I like school. That's the funny thing about it. But because I couldn't comprehend how to learn properly, I was trying to learn orally. But orally can only get you a little bit of the way. But it was only then, it was only then I realised that when I went back to adult education, that they're using the same system, and that same system put me in all sorts of trouble. So I decided to take my cards out and put everything into card games. And I learned to read, write and spell in less than 6 days and speak Spanish. So habla español, no es problema, es de fácil. It's easy. And the point about it is, like, to me, dyslexia is preventable. And I say that with hand on heart.
So is that your message to
That's my
the
message.
Generations of people
who are diagnosed with all this?
Yeah. Who failed, and their children who failed. So we're talking about 20%. I think that's an average across the Western world.
Well, across the Western world, let me just give you the percentages. 30 to 35% of people leaving school today, never mind the 50s, when there was 60 in my class, have a failure rate. And that's just not acceptable. I mean, no other profession it would be allowed to get away with 30 to 35%.
OK, I'm going to ask you this from within, OK? Having been in this situation, how does it feel to sit for 10 years, 12, 14 years in school until you're doing A-levels or you're kicked out of school? Yeah. How does it feel to be sitting day in, day out in school?
Well, I still like school. But, I had a hard time. Like, I mean, I got slapped the same as everybody else when you didn't know something. But that didn't deter me because I realised that you need education. I just didn't know how to grab it and how to hold it. And there was five in my family that left school that couldn't read or write. The only two that got an education was the first boy and the first girl because they were the novelty. And my mother was a gambler and she used to take me to the whists as well. And during the interval, she'd play poker. And I used to watch and I'd say to myself, is she doing? And she never won. She was brutal, just unbelievably bad. But she loved the excitement of the gambling. And I said, no, I don't want the excitement. I just want to win. So I focused even harder as I got that little bit older.
Did and you feel different from your siblings or people in school who were looking at you at maybe somebody who's had learning difficulties? So did you feel...
Well, there was five of us in the family that had learning difficulties. That's the problem. But I didn't feel any different.
You didn't feel any different?
No, but I just realised, like, look, I ain't learning and I don't know why. But when I served my apprenticeship, I started off as a welder. I did turning, fitting, everything. And I was pretty good at it because I have these visuals. Visuals is the key to learning properly. So That's what I ended up doing. I'd look at something. But that gave me an engineering brain to question everything. So what I ended up doing was I ended up breaking down the language back to the basics. And a question for people and just see if you can do it in seconds. Question one, and I've asked teachers, and I'll give you the stats on the failure rate. Question one is how many letters is there in the English alphabet? There's about a 60% failure rate from even well-educated people. So for anybody that would suffer with literacy or dyslexia, that's a negative start. Question two, I have a 90% failure rate, is how many one-letter words in the English language? 90% of the people fail this, and there's only two.
Yes, that's not what you learn in school.
No.
You don't learn how to think that way at
no,
all.
No,
no. Okay, how do you turn around? Okay, if you address the population of people who have problems learning, okay, how do you flip it? How do you turn things around? How do you give them an appetite for learning? What are the methods?
Well, the first method is I measure your memory. No other school on the planet does it. I'm the first to do it, and it's called Simply Learning, or Simply How Learning Center. So I'm hoping to set these up all over the world, retrain teachers. That's what I'm hoping to do. But to get back to the question, It's to understand how to test memory, because you can't get into my class unless I test your memory. And the big question that people ask is, how do you test memory? And the simple answer is pictures.
What do you have to say about people who have dyslexia, learning disability? Do you think they're completely stuck in a bubble? They're locked in society, and how can they get out of it?
Yes, the answer is simple. They're locked in it because it's very simple. If you can't remember and you can't understand that, you're never going to improve. But when you introduce memory as a training program, and as I said, there's 16 cards in a grid, but the grid is laid out in such a way that when I measure your memory, I now know what rate I can teach you. And if you fail, I put you into a training program. And when I bring you back, you will have a memory for learning.
Is it all about memory?
course it is. That's only step one. Step two is the power of thinking and the collation, adding everything into it, the understanding, and everything changes from there on in. Because now you know, the only thing that's stopping you from learning is you don't understand why you can't read and write. And that's why it was very important to start with the one-letter words, the two-letter words, the three-letter words, the four-letter words, the colour-coded system. If phonics and phonetics guarantee a failure of 90% over the last 400 years, and that came down from the very top if you go back to the industrial age.
You've come up with a system, that an alternative system of teaching how to write and how to handle the written language.
The written word.
Based on colours. Is that correct?
The whole system is called a visual memory filing system. Now, that gives the thing away. Every office has a filing system. The colour-coded word structure is really very simple. There's only 24 two-letter words. That's the third question that I didn't ask. Nobody has ever got that right yet in universities anywhere. Maybe they're too lazy, I don't know. But as I said, I brought an engineering brain, so I broke everything down to the minute detail. The 24 two-letter words will be in blue ink. There's under 600 key three-letter words. They will be in green ink. But here's the problem. 75% of all three-letter words has a two-letter word. So,
and that speaks to people who have difficulties reading a word.
Yeah.
They can break it down into chunks.
Yes.
Is that it?
But understandable chunks, not just digestible. Like take the word bat. It's a three-letter word. So the B will be in green, but the AT will be in blue. So you ask a child, how many words can you find in? Only as you read it. You can't go backwards and you can't mix it up. And if I was to turn around and ask somebody in here, they'd probably come up with, even after what I've said, they'd say bat and at. And then I turn around and I say, well, what's wrong with A? A is a word on its own. So then you go to the four-letter words. Now there's 4,270 key four-letter words. And they're in red ink. So if there's a three-letter word in it, it's in green ink. If there's a two-letter word, it's in blue ink. That solves the problem.
How do you apply this to PhD students, business people? Because you've extended your system to completely different areas.
Yes.
Of learning, but learning to different people, different subject languages, business, whatever.
Yeah. Well, let me put it to you like this. And you said PhD. I had 8 PhD graduates in with me just before Christmas. And they're all Muslim women. And I call them the Gang of Eight. She only came in to make up the 8 so they could get the discount. And she was one of the slowest starting with the memory, and she said, I thought the memory would inhibit critical thinking and learning. And she said, boy, did you prove me wrong. She sent me an email, and she said, I've never seen anything like this. She said, it's completely the opposite. And these are PhD graduates. The system is designed for business, it's designed for schools, it's designed for college, it's designed for companies that want to make their workers be more productive. So to make them more productive, if they can remember what they're supposed to do correctly, look at what you're saving. And everybody feels much better when you run through the grids. Like, it's an 8-hour training program, and it's the first thing I do, especially if people have an education. I put them through the 8-hour training, and then to make sure, I give them another 8 hours learning a foreign language.
Okay, so you're running a training centre.
It's a training centre. Simply
social entrepreneur, you're dealing with people, various populations of learners.
Yes, and I've big companies now coming to me.
Children to corporate.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, and China.
What is your place in the world of education? Are you running a parallel universe of learning?
I'm running something that's completely new. It's as simple as that. And it's only when you see what I do you understand. Like, I was teaching in Utrecht, I was teaching in the prisons, I have a 100% success record. I've testimonials from all the teachers there.
Thank you.
It's a no-brainer.
But I've got to leave it there. Thank you. We're looking forward to hear from you in other programs. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Was it Patrick Kavanagh who described it as a rose-red city half as old as time? I wonder how old Molly Malone is. And how many old Ireland's has she seen and celebrated? Slán tán.
Hello and welcome. My name is Caroline Gleason, and you are listening to Near FM 90.3. My guest today is Jerry Cooley, a Dublin tour guide. Last year, we had over 10 million visitors to Dublin, and Jerry has met quite a few of them. Jerry, hello and welcome. Can you tell us, what do you do and what is your background? Have you always been a tour guide?
Well, I was an engineer first, an industrial engineer. I laid out factories, worked locally in Clonshock for Data Products, an American multinational. I suppose that was the first time I was exposed to other cultures, especially American cultures. And I went to America for technology transfers. So I had... I was always sort of entertaining visitors coming in, bringing them around Dublin and all of that as a sort of ad hoc thing to facilitate it. So 30 years in industry, 2006, I cashed it all in. House was paid for, children were reared, three sons done and dusted. And I said I wanted some me time. And I took 2 years out doing nothing. And then I saw an advert in the paper for Kilmainham Jail, OPW, and I applied it. And 2008, I did the summer season in there, and I've been at tour guiding ever since.
Jerry, can you tell me what is special about Dublin?
Ooh, how long have you got? That's a difficult question. I was thinking about this. You gave me some of the questions earlier on. I love the vibrancy of the city. First of all, I love the architecture. I love the architecture of it, and I love the city itself. I love its story, and I love its people. And I was trying to think of the catalyst for all of this. Of course, I was born in Dublin in the Rotunda, and I lived early life in Gardner Street up in the old slum dwellings before we moved back to the homestead in the country in Santry. The Gaelic football revival of the 70s with the football team, I think, was the catalyst for being Dublin. I'm trying to sort of isolate it. There was a great fervour, and not only was it about Dublin, but it also extended into Ireland as well, because the Gaelic Athletic Association, now I know, was a huge part in the Irish, let's call it struggle, and trying to establish themselves culturally, had our own football and our own hurling.
And Jerry, tell me, what do our visitors like about Dublin?
And you know, it's different than Ireland. They like the friendliness of the people. They like us telling it like it is. A lot of PC correctness has creeped into America completely, and they get it's like a breath of fresh air when they hear people saying things and carrying on a little bit irreverential about stuff. They like the irreverential. They like the friendliness. They like the safeness of it. And believe it or not, they like the cleanness of Dublin. They always remark how clean it is.
I must admit, that's one thing that I'm pleasantly surprised with, the number of people that tell me how clean Dublin is.
Yeah.
And of course, it's a great honour that we are in Ireland. We have two cities in the top 10 safe cities in the world to visit.
Yeah.
Dublin and Galway.
Well done. Yeah.
That's another aspect, I think.
That's a badge of honour for us, you know. Yeah, and the safeness of it as well. There's gasps when I tell them the overall crime rate on an annual basis, 20 to 25 murders, that they'd say in some places they get that on a weekend. There's the propensity, of course, of guns and all of that in society. But I love Dublin. I love being from Dublin. I like telling the story about Dublin. And as over 60, I'm part of a generation, I suppose, that knows the difference to what was here before and can see what's coming. And you're sort of trying to hold the line a little bit, I suppose.
That was my next question, Jerry. How has Dublin changed since you began your tours?
Well, I started 10 years ago. I suppose the big change for me would be the sort of social media aspect of things. For instance, if you're giving them information, it's easily checkable. And it's creeping into my tours that, for example, if I go past, in a funny way, and I'm talking about Michael D. Higgins, and I'm explaining that he looks like a leprechaun, I'll say, if you want to check, they access Google, and I can hear them laughing on the bus. They're verifying the images that they see. So I'm bringing the social media side of things is different than what it was 10 years ago. The clientele are typically the same. I typically deal with the empty nesters, people coming here who are retired, maybe visiting with a son or a daughter, a bereavement in the family, which is quite common. A husband or wife has passed away and the son or daughter is bringing them to Ireland because there was a plan to do that. So, yeah, social media, I can't see much of a difference between the clientele and the demographic. I can see a lot more walking tours in Dublin that weren't there 10 years ago. More on an ad hoc basis. Like when I was doing it, Pat Liddy would have been the only one. And then we had the Sandyman came in. And then that sort of accelerated it a little bit.
Which, of course, Sandyman have been banned in many cities yeah. around Europe. Do you think we should prevent them working here?
Not really. I'm not a sort of... I'm not a really only us can do it. If it gets out of control, and I don't see it as being out of control, I think the tours are well managed. The numbers are reasonably low. It's not epidemic proportions. And there is a little bit of a kickback I've felt in the last 3 months about people in general are a little bit fed up with tour groups hogging space on the path and not making enough effort, the guide not making enough effort to get people in out of the way, obstructing people. I can feel a little bit of antipathy towards us in that regard.
Jerry, what's your favourite part of the city and why?
Ooh, well, you know, I suppose pubs would be very important to me because I think that's a whole story. It's a great culture. It feeds into the music and the storytelling. It's a great sort of space. There's 900 pubs in Dublin. That's a huge part of what I do. I also like the Phoenix Park. I love that difference, that Regency style. It contrasts with the Ireland around it, the English Ireland, as I call it, the Anglo-Irish setup in Phoenix Park. I love that. If I was to opt for somewhere that I really, really loved and would visit it as often as I could, would be Glendalough. I'd go for Glendalough. I just love the serenity down there. It's just gorgeous.
And Jerry, can you tell me, is it true or is it still an urban myth, this north-south divide?
Oh, definitely.
And the south-siders thinking they're superior.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's like when I explain the sporting traits in Ireland, I do say that rugby is an elitist sport, and it is. It's only played on the south side and in certain areas on the north side. Yes, but you know, I had the opportunity to do a music session with a friend of mine in the schoolhouse just along the canal and get free access to Aviva. We were doing the All Blacks. We're nearly and after about an hour, that sort of north-south side thing sort of disappeared a little bit. And the south side were singing the songs. They were singing the Dublin in the rare old times. And I felt as though we were giving them a bit of a tough break. I think that it's a little bit of a stereotype. It is there. It is a stereotype. But it's up to everybody, I suppose, to work at breaking down the stereotypes. It is there, but... as the younger generations come through, not so much. Not so much. They tend to get all in together.
Okay. Jerry, can you tell me what strange questions have you been asked on your tours?
Oh, my God. Strange questions. Ooh, let me think. Strange ones is people notice there's a trait among Dublin, old Dublin women, wheeling around these tartan four-wheeled sort of carts. They're all
shopping
carts, yeah. And they're,
you obviously don't have one.
And they often ask what is in those carts. That's a strange question. I do get asked an awful lot because the women who are pushing them are typically maybe really really aged ladies, and they're the typical hat, and they're actually using the cart a little bit as a Zimmer frame type of thing. It's funny to look at, but they often ask me what's in it. I tell them it's the husband's body parts, and they're heading off down to the Liffey to get rid of them.
Well, Jerry, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you
morning.
Very much. And I love your Tipperary accent.
Oh, thank you for that.
That's a Collins Park Northside accent. I got spotted a mile away.
Collins Park, Tipperary, yes.
Yeah, very good. Okay, thank you. No problem.
Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you.